Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They put on the Huzzah Convention. Huzzah is happening at the Doubletree in Portland, Maine, from May 19th to the 21st, 2023. Come play war games featuring epic historical battles, have fun at a sci-fi and fantasy game, or dig into some board games at Huzzah. Visit mhwa.info for more information. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by Boston Brick Co. Boston Brick provides LEGO enthusiasts in Greater Boston with a vast selection of used and new LEGO sets, minifigs, pick-a-brick, and build-a-fig. Boston Brick buys used LEGO too. Visit www.bosbrick.com or call 781-627-7700. Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. We are recording this live from Carnage up in beautiful Killington, Vermont. And today I'm joined by not one, but two of our co-hosts. I'm joined by the one and only Mr. Robert Dunn. Robert, how are you today?
Good. Having had some breakfast.
Yes, such as it was, right?
Yep.
And also joined by Mr. Pete Saloom. How are you, buddy?
I'm here. I'm having a blast.
You're awake?
Ready to do this.
After last night?
I'm awake. I'm conscious.
Those clear, are clear headed
and eager.
I'm some of those things. It is really nice up here, I gotta say. Everyone had said, you know, how nice the resort is and just the area and everything, and I was like, yeah, but come on. And then get here, it's really beautiful.
Everywhere you look, it's kind of a postcard view. It's sort of almost a shame that I sit at a table inside the entire time.
I know, like, we're in a room and there's a window that lets us see outside that's gorgeous. But instead looking at paintings of what the outside looked like.
Of what it might look like.
Yeah. Historically. Not today, but once upon a time in the galaxy far, far away. So for all of you who are new or longtime listeners, we talk about tabletop war games, historical games, local conventions, all that sort of stuff. And today we're going to be talking about Minis Agnostic Rules, which I have to say is a topic that I believe is very passionate for Robert, and Pete seems to be pretty interested as well. And when it was mentioned to me, I said, what the heck are you talking about? Because for some reason, I couldn't wrap my head around it. So like usual, I will take the role of the idiot and learn something new. So where do we want to begin about Minis Agnostic Rules?
So I guess my interpretation of Minis Agnostics mm-hmm. are going to be more along the lines of, you know, usually it'll be a sci-fi or fantasy type. And they're just one of those, see what you already have built and grab from.
Okay.
So it's a bit different than something that, you know, might be more historical game rules that will be, you know, use whatever figures from whatever manufacturers you want. But British World War II infantrymen is going to be the same from whatever faction, from whatever company. So the Minis Agnostic is more like, hey, I've got this figure. This looks cool. How can I?
So just use whatever you have.
Yeah. I know lots of us will, you know, hey, this looks like a cool figure, and have no plan for it, and just buy it. And
when you open them?
Yeah, usually. They get open faster than they get painted.
Oh, okay. Usually I admire at the container and the layers of dust from me just having it sitting there and never having done anything with it.
Now, I usually get to the, it has been assembled and primed.
A lot of primer.
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot of primer.
Priming's good.
So it takes up more space that way. No longer sits in.
That's true. But also, when you do that, it makes it harder for you to be like, I'm never going to do this, and then just sell it off.
So you mentioned that you feel like, in your definition of Minis Agnostic Gaming, you felt it was pigeonholed to fantasy and sci-fi, but you don't think it's applicable to other genres? Or
I mean, it can be used in other genres, but that tends to be, in my experience, what, you know, you can, a little more pulpy you can do.
Oh, yeah.
But if it's something that's pure historical, it's a little hard to say, you know, my British infantryman is filling in for a Zouave. You can do it, but then, you know, it counts as. So generally, if you're going to have a Zouave.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that is the piece where the historical wargaming has a lot more roots in visually representing yes. what was happening mm-hmm. accurately, that piece of history. Whereas in fantasy, sci-fi, or another genre, you're not actually occurred. Yeah, I can get with that.
Take.
Yep.
It's kind of funny, though, because if you look at some of the origins of wargaming, you have Little Wars, and it was, you just had whatever the toy soldiers were. And so yep. at that time, if you were more affluent, you might actually have led soldiers that represented, you know, an actual unit or anything. But for most kids who were doing this, they would just be like, here's this toy soldier, here's this rock or whatever, and they're just having some sort of battle. So to me, it's kind of fascinating that you go from that, where it's maybe a little more abstract and definitely geared more towards children to make it more accessible, and then it's come to where I think it is now, where it's maybe more insular, and it's like, how accurate can we get to both the rules, to the terrain, to the minis, to replicate an exact situation occurred?
Because once you get to the alternate, mm-hmm. it's a lot harder to say, well, you know, that actually didn't happen. They weren't actually, well, this is my interpretation anyway.
They weren't actually on Mars either.
Yes, yeah. They were not actually.
I like to say, it's a game, relax. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it's going to be all serious, then, you know, build it that way. But otherwise, just play and have fun.
I would say that the Minis agnostic point on the spectrum of wargaming is, you know, full opposite end of the spectrum from what I see a lot of new games that I, not that I play, but that I kind of see advertised online and see demos of and stuff, with printing or the development of the minis is such a high-level art form, and it costs quite a lot of money, and you see these kits being sold and kickstarted $350 and things like that, and it looks great, and it is extremely specific to those minis, it seems, and it's the total opposite of kind of we're discussing.
But you can use those, and it's like, hey, these are just little figures.
Yeah, you can.
I don't care for the game, but I will, you know, buy the figures.
You can pull them over into this whatever particular rule set. I have questions about what rule sets are best. That's what I want to hear.
So maybe before we go into that, just for those who are scratching their heads and saying, it's great all of you are talking, but I don't really understand, like, give me examples. Why don't we give an example of a well-known game that is not minis agnostic? I'm going to presume Warhammer?
Yeah, 40K.
40K Warhammer Fantasy or Age of Sigmar or whatever the heck they call it now.
That would be probably the most relatable example.
You buy the rules, the codices, you have to buy their minis, not just minis, but like their minis for each faction. Some people don't, but like generally that's what they intend, and then you play whatever with that. So they're very closed circuit. They're like the Apple of tabletop gaming, right?
Yeah. I would say anything with a strong IP. So like the Fantasy Flight stuff that I believe they still are stuff. Like,
Atomic Mass games.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, they were swapped. No, but they did.
You know, that's obviously very specific. An X-Wing needs to be in it.
I mean, you can buy that there are, you know, 3D companies have other figures, you know, bits and bobs and add on specific skull troopers on this planet.
Wow.
That planet.
But, you know, of course there is.
So, you know, there is enough lore.
Yeah.
Or you could just do what I do and say forget it all and just play with Lego.
I think that's totally related to what we're talking about, is, you know, minis agnostic to me also means you could bend the definition of what a mini is in some ways if you're going to really think outside them. All we're doing is pushing around objects on a surface.
Sure.
You just kind of break it down. So it's more fun if it's a cool mini, but if it was a bunch of nickels and dimes, you would still be achieving sort of the same, you know, mechanics.
Well, I mean, if you're, say, playtesting a scenario, or you're a game designer and playtesting a new set of rules that for minis, often they'll do it. They'll just have pieces of paper and it'll say, it's this unit, here are the stats or whatever, if there are stats, and they'll just do whatever to see if the mechanics work for it. So we have Warhammer and all of them all the way as not minis agnostic. And then if we were to take an exact opposite turn and go to the other end of the spectrum, what would we talk about for a well-known or well-ish that would be minis agnostic?
Probably Frostgrave Stargrave. Probably be most.
And that's completely agnostic?
There is technically, you know, North Star
makes
figures that can be used, but it's basically, you know, like a sprue of bodies and heads. And there's not enough, you know, there's not enough background information that it's like, this is what a texture, like this is experiment. You know, they'll give you the flavor, you know, Frostgrave, you know, kind of stick with the warm, the cold vibes.
Yep.
But you don't even have to do that.
Would you say the Osprey publishing rules in general for the different properties tend to be minis agnostic?
Probably. I mean, but they're not the, I don't think they're the only ones out there that do
it. No, but I mean, they have a variety of rule sets that they have published for different authors.
Yeah, because I mean, yeah, they do the books, so they're like, yeah, we don't care about, you know, they themselves don't necessarily.
No, yeah, I mean, they're a book publisher.
Yeah.
So Frostgrave, potentially, great game. What else do we have that would be out in that kind of category?
I have to talk about my favorite game, which is
Uno?
Yes. Song of Blades and Heroes, which has some other iterations of it as well, in kind of themes and stuff, but it's completely minis agnostic. It's just a rule set. It encourages use anything character. And again, I think it's probably because this publisher doesn't have any skin in the minis market, you know, and so they haven't chosen to be part of that industry. And yeah, I've seen people use every mini from, you know, Games Workshop stuff. I've seen all sorts of those plastic D&D minis that you can pick up at like the comic book shop. And I've seen people use Lego guys as well. So they're kind of all over.
And that's by Ganesha Games, right?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. So those are kind of the frameworks that we're talking about. Now, when we're looking at minis agnostic rules, what would you say would be a reason for someone who's never considered using this type of set of rules to play a game, why they should take a chance on it? Oh, what's a benefit of it that other rules don't necessarily have?
If they are already into the hobby, meaning they've got a shelf full of minis somewhere, they can start right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the barrier to entry is probably a PDF of the rules or a copy, your friend bringing his book or something.
Yeah.
And you could be playing, I would imagine, within an hour versus I'm going to start playing 40K this week and then somebody having to tell you, oh, no, you're not.
So you're saying there's no escalation leagues necessary for minis agnostic rules?
I can talk about that a little, though, because Song of Blades and Heroes has a campaign mode where you can play, you know, match after match and quote unquote kind of level up your war band and things like that. So there is continuous play available. I think most people probably don't use that just because it's probably hard to kind of schedule that. But that's in that rule set, I imagine, feature as well.
Okay.
So one of the games that I play, mm-hmm. Firefight, and so when we go and play, so one of the people that plays in shop.
Oh,
so,
nice.
So he has designed and printed acrylic figures, all sorts of styles, design, and then he just uses those. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, using flats, that's a good idea too.
Yeah, I have a toolbox, rolly toolbox, full of figure flats that I use when I run RPGs, and it's like very obvious to me that should I want to play, you know, Song of Blades and Heroes or something of that ilk, like these would be obvious things that I could use,
mm-hmm.
As long as, you know, the other people I'm playing with don't mind. And it's just going to be way less energy for me to sit for figures to try to do
that. Do you know, let's talk about that for a moment. Because I think whenever you talk about miniatures gaming, people may not realize it, but there's a really high barrier to entry, right? So not only is it that there's an incredible time sink for it, because you have to make all the things, you have to paint all the stuff and everything, and train and read all the rules and everything, but also there's a huge financial barrier too. So it does and can prohibit those who don't have disposable income, those who are less fortunate and haven't been given all the opportunities that other people have done. So by its nature, it can have that gatekeeping in effect that I'm going to say all of us don't want to happen. At least I know us here around the table, we don't want that gatekeeping to exist. So being able to remove that and to make it easier, like for me in particular, probably because I have kids, but my big thing is how can we get kids into it, right? How can we get the next generation into it? I see so many benefits from tabletop gaming, and there's been studies talking about cooperation aspect, problem solving, how kids just do better with this, interpersonal skills and everything. So being able to do that stuff with the next generation and make it fun, I think is key. But if you have someone who's new, a kid or whatever, and they come and you have 40 pages of rules and there's all this other stuff, and you spend 2 hours before you can even start to play, and then they ask, what do we need to do if I want to do this at home? And you tell them, you have to do this, that, and the other, and basically spend like $9,000, they're never going to do it, right? So being able to make it where they actually can do it and get involved easily, I think it's really important. And so being able to go this route where you don't have to worry about specific figures for rules, I think it'd make it much easier, right?
Absolutely. Put yourself in the shoes of like a person that's completely new to the hobby, maybe has just some interest and is going to learn about wargaming of some kind, and they show up at probably at like a local game store or something and demo a game with somebody who's going to teach them how to play Warhammer 40K or X-Wing or something like that. And they, you know, they enjoy it and they decide, okay, I'm in. I would like to play this. What's the next step? You're basically immediately bumped into a paywall at that point. You know, mm-hmm. The next step is go over there and buy this thing. Now, I want to defend the local game store that's very good for them, and they need to be able to get people to walk over to the shelf and buy things.
No, of course.
And that makes sense. But certainly nobody can deny that for some percentage of people, they'd say, oh, huh, that's too bad. I didn't know it was $175 to buy the box set. Go play cards instead or something.
Yeah.
Which is understandable. And when you if you're demoing a game where you say, yeah, you know, first of all, maybe it's a skirmish game and not a full army game or something like that, which, you know, I've noticed a lot of the minis agnostic things are smaller scale. Mm-hmm. First of all, you're lowering the barrier to entry by just saying maybe you need 8 to 10 models instead of 150 or something. And then second, you're saying, you know, you can kind of use anything you find, to represent these things. Okay, so now they have options. Those options might be used stuff, things like that. That might save them. It's hard to teach people games that you really like and care about and then tell them, like, yeah, and it's going to be a real struggle for you to be able to become a part of this.
Yeah.
Which the friend that I talked about that prints out all the...
Mm-hmm.
So it all sits at the library. Our library has a... of us in the... But so he has bags of printed figures. He has printed out the dice, markers, wow. And all of that at the library.
That's cool.
So if you want to learn how to play or show up and play a game with what's there, no expenditure out of your... Go to the library... Find a table, lay everything out.
That is the coolest library ever. I do not remember the library.
But he also has a lot of fun just, designing and printing.
Yeah.
So there's always more stuff showing up.
Sure, that's the creative side, right? Yeah.
Well, and that's good too, because if there's always something new, then it's going to encourage people to come back mm-hmm. and see what the new thing is.
Yeah.
Right?
Get some curiosity.
Yeah.
Yep.
Build that excitement, and you just want to play more and more. I also think this barrier to entry is probably why... one of the reasons why, anyway, that role-playing games have kind of taken off. The rule books, depending on the rules, they're not necessarily cheap, but you buy that, and that's basically all you need, that and dice, right? Some people go further and get minis.
And one book covers a whole lot of players, right?
Yeah.
Whereas one army covers one player, right?
Exactly.
It's kind of the concept of, like, basketball, right?
Mm-hmm.
One basketball, 12, 10 people get to play.
Yep.
Hockey, everybody needs $300 of pads.
True.
Skates, sticks.
No, definitely. So we've talked about some of the reasons why you would want to tackle the topic of playing a minis agnostic set of rules. Let's flip that. Why wouldn't you want? What are some bad things? Or maybe bad's not the right word. Some things that are less enjoyable or that could be improved.
One of the things that some people have is the fact that you're not necessarily a fully predefined.
Mm.
Like, you will have boundary. Like, hey, this is how ours is. Here's a big bad, a name, a vibe.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's up to you to develop. Like, oh, well, what does my space? Why are these people all here? Who are they actually fighting? You need to create more than you would a Star Wars.
No, I get you. So if you're someone who's seen Star Wars, and I presume people listening to this have, you know in your head what it is, right? And what it's supposed to represent. And for someone like me, I have an extra emotional investment into it because I've had an amazing response to Star Wars, and I love it more than almost anything in the world. And if I see that there's a Star Wars game, I'm going to play it because I kind of have an idea of what I'm getting into. Whereas if there's some sort of minis agnostic set of rules, even if I've heard of the rules, it could be so different, like that one game, from what someone else will be doing. And you don't really know what you're going to get necessarily, right? So that could kind of be off-putting for people, maybe?
Yep.
Or scary? I don't know.
I think it could be. It requires more answers from the players. Everything isn't predefined for you, which is what you were mentioning. Whereas if you just want to be fully engulfed in a, very well-defined existing IP such as Star Wars or, the Warhammer, universe mm-hmm. is extremely dense and full of, information. If you want to be just immersed in those things, all that work is done for you. And so that may be a reason that you want to, plunk yourself down and be in the universe you know and you love that, and there you are. You don't have to answer any questions. They've all been answered.
No, that's true. I think also, though, maybe as a positive for this, it forces you to be brave, right? So if you're not familiar with whatever the game is or who the people are and you have no idea about what's happening with these minis and Gnostic rules, you have to have the courage to say, I'm going to go and try that. And maybe it's going to be awful, but maybe it's not. And so if you've never done it before and you jump in, you could love it. And then that might give you the opportunity to then next time you play another one that someone else has. And again, you're not going to know what it's going to be like, but then you can have these, like, it's every time's almost like playing a new game.
It is. And I guess somebody could worry about that. What I would say is, though, that the risk is so. The risk is much higher if you've bought the huge expensive army and you jump in and you have a bad experience, you know, then, oh, you know, I just recycled a few of the minis I already had and I downloaded a PDF and I didn't enjoy this at all. All you really lost was your afternoon, probably, you know,
no, that's true.
If that. So the risk is also low. You can try it, and I would encourage people to not have any fear about trying new games, because, like I said, the worst thing, you just really hate it for some reason and you just don't play it anymore.
No, true. Let's talk about production values a little bit. So usually when there's an IP that's well-known, Warhammer or whatever, the companies that produce these games, the minis, the rules, they sink so much time, right, into making it look fancy and pretty and get eye-catching. And they can do this because they have these large staffs.
And budget.
Yes. Now, for figures or minis agnostic rules, would you say that they're also equally from a medium or larger size corporation or entity, organization, or do they tend to be more of a cottage sort of industry?
My perception is far, far more. I don't actually know the truth to all that.
But we have to realize that, you know, we may be thinking of, you know, this particular company. Like, we may be well aware of the company. In reality, it's just two people.
Could be.
And we're like, this company puts out a lot of resource and a lot of material. It's got to have big staff, but it's, you know, two people.
I think in many cases that is what's going on.
I think so too.
Yeah.
So we think that, you know, oh, this is a big company.
Mm-hmm.
When in reality,
it's not.
A couple of people. It's a really good brand.
Actually, it's very impressive for those situations.
Yeah. I also think that it might not be a difference in the quality of production. Some of it is identifying what the customer wants out of the production value. And if you look at some of these high budget, you know, super glossy, beautiful books from some of these companies, yeah, they cost them a fortune to produce, but they're going to sell probably a million copies of it. And the books are not cheap.
No.
And so that's a big project, and that's what those customers want. And then there are customers who want a good rule set that kind of caters to their particular interest, and there isn't a whole real need for them to have tons of full color art in the book. They're more looking for the rules, right? Give me the rules, give me the information. I'm more the creative type that's gonna go work in these minis as agnostic, you know, setups. And so I don't actually need that, is what they're kind of saying. And so the people making those rules, they're probably those types of people too. So they put their energy into, you know, the rules, the imagery.
I mean, the rules historically are what you're...
True.
With no font and no spacing.
No.
And you just printed out a sheet of words to find what you were looking for. 80 pages.
Yeah, I would say, okay, we do look for a little bit better production value than like a printing press. Yeah.
I was just thinking, we've talked a lot about this topic from the viewpoint of a player, but we haven't really talked about it as much from the viewpoint of those who design the games. And I was just thinking that when you have something like this, where it's a mom and pop type of shop, so to speak, and they want to try a new rule system or change things up and just give something a chance, I think it's harder for them to do that if they have to have like the full, you know, 140-page glossy book and all this other sort of stuff. And so with a minis agnostic set of rules that they want to try something different, I think they may be more willing to take that chance because the costs for them are also lower too. So they have this idea, they think it's going to be really interesting that they want to try. They know they don't have to have a whole line of minis or anything to go with it. They know that they can make the rules look good, but they don't have to be a coffee table book, right? And so then they can release them electronically. It costs them less time, them less money, and also costs the consumer less, so that maybe they can have this cool idea that no one's ever tried before, or this unique take, and then they can actually put it out there and see what actually happens, whereas maybe otherwise they couldn't do that.
It also leads to other things for those designers. So I listen to a lot of stuff about Minis Rules Design online, and I've learned that what they commonly do is they just start by pushing around coins and pieces of paper on a table and kind of going through the rules and the mechanics that they've designed and just breaking it and figuring out what doesn't work. And then when they publish their rule sets, they may publish it as whatever themed game with which whatever title that they've chosen. But what happens sometimes is these bigger companies, they look at those rule sets,
yep,
and they read them. They have people who read them. And what if you are, you could decide whether this is lucky or not, but what has happened and occurred is they then reach out to those designers and they say, we're making the Star Wars game, but looks like you've already got the rules we want. How about we buy that?
Mm.
Because the developing good mechanical sound rules for any game is, I mean, it takes just brilliant people to really get it right. It's not just something crank out and hope it works.
No, it's hard.
And so they look at, those bigger companies look at the cottage industries as a talent pool and a source for information to go. It's sort of the farm team, you know, of the rest of the industry as well.
Yeah, so I mean, Osprey and Modiphius have done similar things. So, like, Modiphius worked with Nordic Weasel Games. He used to just do PDFs,
mm-hmm,
of, like, 5 parsecs from home, Pike Board, and 5 leagues. And so they worked with Nordic Weasel. They brought him on to staff, or they used him and
contracted
him out. So they put all of his work, and then they published the publishing book. So they're binding up his sets of rules,
yeah,
into a, you know, hardcover book that then buy. You know, they updated a little bit and clean up, you know, buy hard copies.
That's cool.
Osprey does, you know, similar stuff with most of their war games they put out, you know, like, hey, yeah, someone approaches them with, hey, here's an idea that I have.
Mm-hmm.
So any of those blue books, Frostgrave, Stargrave.
I think so, yeah.
They submitted their idea, and Osprey picked it up and says, all right, we can put you in a big book, put you in a little blue book.
Mm-hmm.
You had to work with, you know, their concern, how,
true,
many pages you had to work with, depending on the game, better.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's great for, you know, the smart person who's got the creative idea, maybe doesn't have the resources, or maybe just is not an editor and a publisher. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just a rules nerd, and they're good at designing games, but they don't know the first thing about page layout, right?
Yep.
They need to bring the other skill sets into that, or else the game never sees the light of day, right?
Yep.
You know, it just stays on the hard drive forever.
No, it's really good that exists, and it's nice that that's not the only, right? So that you can do that if you want to, or you could not. You just do it electronically. You do it whatever you like. You could run it off of the mimeograph, I guess, and kids these days don't know what that is, but and you could just do that. You could do whatever, any version of that, and just get your stuff out there. It's kind of neat that happens now, and it almost kind of has gone full circle, because the origins of all these things, whether it's wargaming, minis gaming, RPGs, that's how they began. It was just people coming up with some ideas and seeing what works and trying to with their local group and doing things, and then it grows out of that. But it's nice that that independent streak hasn't gone away, in as much as it probably doesn't get as much attention as the other types of games do, but it's still there so that people can do that if they want.
Yeah, and just the whole file PDF sharing, you know, drive-through,
mm-hmm,
kind of world has just opened that. If you're, you know, a relatively ambitious, your spare time, your full-time job, you could probably have a little side hustle of, you know, a couple of different games that you've developed over a period of 5 or 10. It's available worldwide, you know, for anybody to download for normally a few bucks.
No.
And it's not going to make you rich, but for folks like that, or creative people, I know from things I've created, the real payoff is like, oh, somebody wanted it. So, you know, at
nice.
All, like that somebody wanted it is sort of the payoff. So I'm sure other people would be thrilled, you know, if they got, you know, 5 downloads a year, you know, or something, they'd be probably pretty hyped about that.
It's like, I bought some books that then got printed off of like Lulu,
okay,
or Drive-Thru RPG,
mm-hmm,
has a print-on-demand option.
Demand.
Yeah.
Amazon has a problem.
Yep.
Hey, here's a rule book or an expansion you have already had, and then,
yep,
boom.
Oh yeah,
print it out and you have a hard copy.
I've done
that.
Yeah, because I like to have a touch usually,
yes,
if it's something I'm gonna play regularly, somewhat.
Yeah, I like the tablet.
They do. You know, those are good options. I know sometimes people, they'll take the PDF and they'll go to like their local Kinko's or whatever, and then they'll just have it printed off, or Staples or whatever.
Yeah.
And then get it however bound they want and do all that. They can have it just
printed.
Yeah, I think so, but different strokes for different folks,
yep,
right?
I'm trying to think when, like, the next time I'm going to play a mini, you know, Agnostic is. And I don't really have anything on my radar right now, you know, currently. I would have to be the one who organized it, I think,
mm-hmm,
for it to happen. And I'm just thinking of all the stuff in my basement right now that I have that is basically ready to go, you know, for a number of either, you know, a number of different. And it seems like such a good way to bring people in to the hobby, even if that isn't the rule set they stick with or whatever, getting them in the door, getting them in the environment, learning to be comfortable, you know, measuring out movement and rolling dice and reading, you know, stats. Maybe they move on to the things we're talking about that are more high entry type of games, but it just seems like such a powerful recruitment method into miniatures gaming, which I don't really know the state of miniatures gaming. Like, I couldn't tell you if there's more players now or less or what the deal is, but I don't feel like it's something where that is experiencing the type of boom that like Dungeons and Dragons is and things like that, where I feel like there are 10 times more players than there were a decade, things like
that. That's probably more tied to costs, really speaking.
I bet, yeah.
Yeah, and the promotion behind it. I mean, you've got these web series and things that are experiencing tens of millions of views and Dragons, and it's finding its way into pop culture. Stranger Things, you know, probably did more for Dungeons than their whole marketing department did for a decade, you know, things like that. You don't see that with certainly not with historical. You don't see that. I see that as sort of in trouble, in my opinion. You know, as far as a subset of war, vast, and its detail, and the armies are big. And if you walk around here and look at who's playing them, it is our older friends usually, right? I don't usually see a ton of young people in that particular space. So I get a little worried about bringing people in. You know. I feel like we should do what we can to bring people in and get them excited about whatever it is they're interested in. You know?
Mm-hmm. The Star Wars stuff and the 40K still has, a big drop.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, just this random Civil War game. The knowledge of history, I mean, everyone had to start somewhere.
True.
And, you know, there are probably vast amount of knowledge.
Yes, there are.
The design of the buttons. Like, that is not something I care
about.
They have
the buttons.
Yes,
they probably do, yeah. So it's funny because basically what both of you are talking about is the graying of the hobby. And this is something like talked about all the time. And I know that the wonderful people over at Wargame Soldiers and Strategy magazine, way back when they started the Great Wargaming Survey, one of the things they really wanted to find out was, is the graying of the hobby an actual thing? Is it taking place? And I believe, and I could be wrong, I'm sure someone will correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that is not the case.
That's good.
Which honestly surprised me. Because I firmly believe that it was. But that there's more people coming into miniatures gaming, and there's still a significant-ish a number of them doing historicals, too. And I'm going to presume, partly because I'm going to be conceited, but I'm going to presume that maybe some of these people have taken the same route that I did. So I started off, you know, I played Magic of the Gathering way back in the day and did all that, and then I moved into 40K and did all the GW stuff, and then I decided, you know, I'm going to graduate and be like a real gamer, right? And get into historicals because I was going to be serious now. And so I went into historicals, but I took that path going from all that GW stuff all the way through. And it almost seems, and maybe this is just kind of, you know, bias fulfilling itself, but it almost seems person after person that I ever talked to who play historicals, if they're a certain age or younger, that's the path that they've taken. And that they do some sort of fantasy or whatever.
Yeah.
Or sci-fi kind of game. And then they're like, well, these look cool. They like the pretty colors or the uniforms or whatever. Or they just want to use cannons and tanks and things. And then they start playing some of those too.
Yeah. And certainly that path you mentioned is the prescribed path.
I think.
When you walk into a game store, you don't get to the front door without seeing the Magic the Gathering posters, right?
Yep.
And then you go in there and there's 10 boxes of boosters. Mm-hmm. And you are obviously being instructed to play Magic the Gathering as you enter this business. And then the next thing would be, or at least it was during my teenage years in game stores, was Games Workshop setup had the big GW with the paint rack and then all of the boxes in cellophane and stuff like that. So it was like, oh, well, that's obviously the next step here, you know. And it probably would take a lot of steps before you got to, and now I'm going to recreate the War of 1812, you know, on a 12-foot table, you know, with a million miniatures and stuff. So it's a longer road to get there, and it's certainly not for everybody. I'm not saying that's what the measure of success is in being the gamer. Whatever whatever floats your boat and is what you enjoy, I think is the right answer. I just think feeding that funnel is important. Finding people to come in and just try something.
Mm-hmm.
And just so that they can get in and find out what it is sort of the job to do. And then wherever they land on the spectrum of complexity and expense and involvement and historical or not, and that's sort of just on the...
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of went the same path as Magic and then 40K and Oracles.
Me too. Yep. Yeah. Same exact thing, except I never moved on to historicals. Something stopped me.
You haven't done it yet.
Sure, never say never. Haven't yet, yeah.
You need to play a 40K tournament at a convention like Carnage,
where you
have all these tables of 40K, and then in between your games, you walk around the hall, and you're like, hey, look at all these other people playing with other types of figures. Like, hey, that looks cool. Like, how do I get into this?
Mm-hmm.
If you play one of those, you're not in the tournament. Start expanding your horizons that way.
So what I will do is I will hard pass on the 40K tournament, and I'll just go over and check out the other tables. I think that'll be the proper procedure for me.
Tournaments are a hard pass for me. Some people love them, though. It's just, I don't know, organized play is too organized for me.
Yeah, I was the most competitive card player in the world. Like, just would travel all over the country trying my hardest to beat people at throwing little pieces of cardboard on the table. And something broke deep inside me. And now I just play make-believe games.
Make-believe is fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've kind of... So I've done that transition, but then also... Now I find I'm kind of going back away from it, where I'm like, I don't want anything as involved because, you know, there's only so much time. There's all this other stuff going on in one's life.
Yeah.
So let's keep it simple. And I've accepted finally that I'm never going to paint a full army. Like I have, but I'm never doing it again. That's just not a thing in my... And I look at my pile of lead and realize that's also not going to ever get any smaller. So
it's good to be honest with yourself.
Just,
you know, instead of looking at it and having even just that low grade anxiety of like, didn't paint any of those this month. Oh, and I bought some new ones, you know, that type of thing. You know, it's good to just be real with yourself. Like, do you have enough stuff to have fun for the rest of your life? Like, that's kind of a question I ask myself. And I already do.
It's a good question.
So, it's very hard for me to pull the trigger on buying new games at this stage because, number one, I'm not really a big collector of things to have less things, mm-hmm. typically. I'm not a minimalist, but I like kind of less clutter. And number two, I just have so many great games that don't get the play they deserve. You know, that it's hard for me to jump. There's great stuff in the basement sitting on the shelf.
No, true, true.
Which is the benefit of, you know, Minis Agnostic.
Exactly. Exactly.
Look at you.
Hey, I've got all these figures I already have. I don't want to buy more.
So I buy a brand new game.
You buy a book.
By getting the book, you know, and your clutter pile has not grown, mm-hmm. except by one PDF. You don't even have to print it if you don't mm-hmm. want to, right? And now you've got some new interesting rule set. I mean, that's just such a major benefit.
And it can lead you to go, hey, I remember having a figure that might work like this. And then you just go and you pick up one.
Where is that thing?
You paint that one figure.
Yeah.
Yep.
Your pile gets a little bit smaller.
Yep.
There you go. Personally, I like hard copies. I like the physical books on the shelf.
Once I'm sold on it, once I feel like, hey, this is good, this is something I want to share with other people type of thing, then I'm sold. I kind of use the PDF route to make that evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'll read a PDF, and if I think, especially if it's one of those PDFs, a lot of times they do the pay what you want type thing.
Yeah.
I feel like, to me personally, as a creative person, I feel like, sure, I will take that rule, that PDF for free, and I'll read it. But if I feel like it's something that I enjoy and I'm actually going to put in use, I'm probably going to go back and make whatever they're suggested. Usually they suggest, you know, give me $5 or something like that. I'll go back and do that if it's something that I feel like I'm actually going to get use out of this. Just, I think that's important. I really don't like the work for free concept that circles around this industry way too much. And a lot of people feel like they're pressured to work for free,
mm-hmm.
Especially these cottage people.
Yeah.
So that's probably another topic for another
no,
show.
No, that's another episode.
Yeah. Don't work for free if you're out there.
I will say, though, it's interesting you mentioned pay what you want, because it's been a while since we've done it, but we put episodes of the podcast up on Wargame Vault, which is also DriveThruRPG. And I'm a firm believer of podcast has to be free so everyone can get access to it. But also, I realize there are some people who want to support it. And so I've had episodes put up, again, fall behind, but they pay what you want. Some people have done that. They'll go, they want an episode, they like it, they'll give a few dollars or whatever. And it gives them the chance for them to feel good.
Yeah.
For me, it's not so much the money. I mean, yes, it helps, but it's more so that they can feel like that they're doing a good thing. It's a mitzvah for them, really.
Yeah, give them people, that opportunity. When people see that there is something that they that speaks to whatever their particular passion is, whatever it is, a surprising number of people want to support you. They don't want you to go, you know, because I mean, podcasts come and go. You know, it's not easy. You have a kind of an exceptional story with how long you've been doing this, but that is not typical.
It's because I'm stubborn.
People will run even a good podcast might run 100 episodes or something like that, and then they fizzle out. They run out of things to talk about, or something, you know. And people feel bad when they lose that because that's a voice they hear regularly. You know that they're
it's
listening
a friend
to.
For them.
Yeah.
Really.
Yep.
No, you're right. I mean, I felt that way about many podcasts.
Oh yeah, I'm thinking about one right now, and I'm like, oh.
It's called Extremities, and they go travel all over the world and really shed a light on these places that you've never heard of. And once pandemic hit, they couldn't go anywhere, and they haven't been able to pick back up. And so it's been years. I'm just waiting for them to go on some island I've never heard of and tell me about these people who live there and how amazing they are. Yeah. So I think we've kind of covered a lot of the aspects of Mini's agnostic rules and given people a chance to figure out if this is something they want to dive into. Do we want to give a final recommendation or a pitch, I guess, elevator pitch for people for Mini's agnostic rules or a rule set that you particularly enjoy? Anyone?
I brought a couple of books besides us. But
just close your eyes and imagine.
I actually really like the Modiphius' 5 Parsecs from Home.
Okay.
So it's a solo rule set, and the books, you know, nice easy set of rules. There's a couple of PDF expansions they've come up with, but basically you just build your crew and then you go through. It's a whole lot of tables. So if you don't like tables and helping to create your universe, your specific mission, you might not like it.
Okay.
But you know you're going to need 5 or 6 figures for your own force, and then everybody else just kind of falls into categories, rabble, some organized.
Okay.
And so you just need a smattering of figures that can fit into maybe a couple of oddball weapons and just kind of go at it.
Okay.
And it's, you know, the game itself, you know, actually on the board, you're only going to be playing for, you know, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, maybe an hour, a long time for some reason. So they're pretty quick games on your own. And then you're building the story. So there's a lot of player input as to what, you know, what the story is, the MacGuffin going after. So, you know, you have to put some more effort into it, but it's just basically a framework. It has, you know, a basic outline of, hey, this is kind of what the universe is.
Okay.
You know, you're the one naming it. You're the one naming the rivals.
Where do you get this? Did you get it from the Drive Thru RPG? Did you get it from the Modiphius website, game store?
I don't remember where I picked it up, but they have, I believe it's on the Modiphius website.
Okay.
Start there.
So we'll have a link in the show notes.
Modiphius website has, you know, that. There's the fantasy version of it, which is 5 leagues from.
Okay.
And you know, you go out and you're questing, going into dungeons, you know, randoms, you're walking. So in that one, they actually, you know, make a little map of.
Okay, so you would recommend people do 5 parsecs?
Depends on what you prefer.
Okay.
If you like fantasy versus sci-fi,
do the other one.
And they're all small model counts.
Okay.
And if you have moved on from, you know, like 40K or fantasy, bigger army games, you're going to have more than it to play.
And what about you, Pete?
So
what's your elevator pitch?
So I'm just going to pitch Song of Blades and Heroes, even though I've probably talked about it too much. But it does not have the solo aspect, or at least not that I am aware of. There may be an expansion that goes into that not
came out during COVID.
Maybe, as so many did. And I think the barrier is near zero. The rules themselves are very inexpensive. I think definitely under $20, maybe under $10. I'm not sure on the current price.
Cool.
So you can get into that quickly. You can get 2 people playing in a game for once you're comfortable with the rules, which are very, very simplified. Probably 30 to 40 minutes for a game if you have 4 people or something.
So what
like
you're
that.
Saying is, it's a set of rules that you could teach me to play.
I could teach you to play pretty competently Song of Blades and Heroes in 15 minutes or less.
Wow.
And you'd know 85% of the rules. It's basically, it runs only on D6.
Mm-hmm.
You only have 2 stats on your every character. They've got a quality and a combat. That's it.
Okay.
And there's no measuring tape. There's just kind of a 3-sided template that has a long side, a medium side, and a short side. And those are your moves. Basically, those are all the rules of the game.
So it's a very accessible game, easy to get into.
Yeah.
And you got it from DriveThruRPG?
I think I got it straight from Ganesha Games website.
Okay.
You should your local game store can order it for you, because I would just urge you to support them. They need your support. If not, you can pick it up online.
Well, I just want to thank everyone for listening to this episode. I want to thank both of you for being here in person, and hope everyone who listens to this and was here at Carnage had a great time. And as always, you know the deal. You can find us on all the things as Wargaming Recon. And of course, no matter how busy you are, no matter what's going on, no matter how much time you're thinking, what new Minis Agnostic rules should I play? You know, you have to keep on gaming.
Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon on your mobile device. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Wargaming Recon is dedicated to the memory of longtime listener Andrew. I ask all listeners to join me in a moment of silence in memory of Andrew. Wargaming Recon is sponsored by the Historical Gaming Club of Uxbridge. They meet the first Wednesday of each month at Great Stories in Wittensville, Massachusetts. Dice drop at 7 p.m. on games spanning World War II to the Wild West and beyond. Guest demos are encouraged. All are welcome. Find them on Facebook at Historical Game Club of Uxbridge. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They put on the Huzzah Convention. Huzzah is happening at the Doubletree in Portland, Maine from May 19th to the 21st, 2023. Come play war games featuring epic historical battles, have fun at a sci-fi and fantasy game, or dig into some board games at Huzzah. Visit mhwa.info for more information.
Welcome to this episode of Wargaming Recon.
Let me grab my coffee. Hold on.
That's for you, Joshua. Okay.
As he leaves it in.
He probably will, actually. Yeah. He'll put it at the end, most likely.